Today we'll have a rebroadcast of an early New World Notes, the 11th installment from April 2008. It's called American Sex and Sexuality.
Welcome to Pat McCormick's new daytime game, Humiliation. And now, here's your host, Pat McCormick.
Good afternoon and welcome to Humiliation. Today, someone in our studio audience will be humiliated and perhaps completely destroyed. Will it be you?
Oh, no!
Or will it be you?
Oh, please, no.
Or will it be you, Mr. Jack Davenport of Sandy City, Ohio?
Oh, please, I'd rather not. Don't mind. I'd rather not play the game.
Drag him up here. Don't fight it, Mr. Davenport.
Please.
This is humiliation.
If you don't mind.
Now, Mr. Davenport, you must answer this question or be humiliated.
All right, but please, make it easy, will you?
When the Great Wall of China was being built, who was the foreman?
I think I've got that one. That was Chin Lu Hao.
I'm sorry, Mr. Davenport. He was the day foreman. Oh. We wanted the night foreman, Chin Lu Wai.
Oh, no. Oh, gosh.
You didn't answer the question, so now you will be humiliated. Mr. Davenport, you're the president of the bank in Center City.
Yes, yes.
Head of the Chamber of Commerce.
That's correct.
You have six lovely children and a beautiful, devoted wife.
They're wonderful people, good people.
Do you know of anything that could destroy all that?
No, I doubt anything could destroy
all that. What about the year 1953? Do you recognize this photograph of the beautiful striptease artiste and star of the Kit Kat Club, the lovely Marla?
No.
Our spies tell us, Mr. Jack Davenport, that in April of 1953, you spent seven consecutive nights at the Kit Kat Club dancing and carousing with the lovely Marla. And luckily, for humiliation, the head waiter took 8mm movies of us. There's you and the lovely Marla in action. Roll that film. There he is, America. Let's hear it for Jack Davenport, Playboy USA.
I'm ruined. I'm destroyed. I'm broken, man.
That's the whole idea, Davenport. This is humiliation. And right now the calls are coming in. Remember the bank you were president of? Forget it. This very moment, your wife and children are boarding up the front door. Your faithful dog, Spot, has committed suicide. We've given you the shaft, Davenport. So here's $40, a case of gin, and the key to a cheap hotel room where you'll spend the rest of your life. Now come out of here.
You can't do this to a man.
Welcome to New World Notes, edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Well, as the lovely Marla was advising me just last week, it's time to have a show focusing on sex. And I'll tell you why. War, violence, right-wing Christian flag wavers, war crimes a-go-go, U.S. soldiers betrayed by the very institutions and president that are calling them to risk their lives for no good reason, 1 million Iraqis killed, 4,000 American soldiers killed, that's in combat only, and not counting the Blackwater goons. Propaganda everywhere, infusing not only the executive branch, but also practically the entire news media. Once supposedly the watchdog, now certainly the lapdog. Views today called conservative resemble fascism much more than they resemble the principled conservatism of, well, there must have been somebody. Herbert Hoover? Barry Goldwater? Somebody explain to me what's conservative about abolishing the Bill of Rights. How about a Congress whose official motto seems to be, what, me worry? Now, those are only the topics we've discussed here on New World Notes since we began lighting up the airwaves 3 months ago, which means that 90% of America's woes aren't even listed here. It's too much. It's too depressing. We need to lighten up a bit. What can we talk about? Here the lovely Marla, star of the Kit Kat Club, came to my aid. Well, she said, How can you talk about the America we want without mentioning sex? That's it, I exclaimed, leaping to my feet, ruining Marla's lap dance and sending her flying backwards onto the next table, where she made quite an impression on the Archbishop. I ran out the door, started up my Harley-Davidson Road King on the first kick, and raced home to my computer and scoured the internet, searching for joyous celebrations of sex and sexuality in contemporary America. Okay, Harleys don't have Kickstarters anymore, I know that. And worse, apart from a couple hundred thousand photographs, which don't lend themselves well to radio, there aren't any joyous celebrations of contemporary American sex and sexuality on the internet, or apparently anywhere else. Not in prose, poetry, or song. So what's there? Stodgy stuff. Treatises examining whether prostitution degrades women, or else degrades women and men. 300 web pages by homeschooling enthusiasts. Pages that consist mainly of news stories about public school teachers charged with molesting students, each supplemented by a handful of apropos Bible verses. There's advice to Mrs. Spitzer. Reports of increasing HIV infections. Ever tougher punishments and public humiliations for those who commit ever more minor sex offenses. New laws prohibiting sex offenders from living within 2,000 feet of a fire hydrant or kosher delicatessen. And, of course, everything you've always wanted to know about abstinence, but were always afraid to ask. What's wrong with this picture? I'll tell you that, too. It's degrading, demeaning, depressing, and boring. Maybe we should go back to talking about Iraq. At least that isn't boring. Where's the joy? Where's the delight? Where's the popular support and encouragement for experimenting, for going beyond confining boundaries, for transgressing? Whatever happened to the days when having sex with a spouse, maybe your spouse, maybe someone else's, was seen as good for the soul, good for the body, a great way to spend a rainy afternoon, and even a blow against the empire? Oh yes, the empire was alive and kicking in Nixon's day as well as now. Imagine a time when a book with the title The Joy of Sex would be a huge bestseller. I bought a copy at a used bookstore just a couple of months ago. It's held up well over the years, better than I have, unfortunately. If there was a best-selling sex book today, its title would be 365 Incurable STDs You Can Get. Whatever happened to the age of Aquarius? Why aren't we seeing signs advising make love, not war? And don't tell me it's because there's a shortage of war at the moment. Anyway, I pause in my lonely campaign to bring back 1969 in order to help New World Notes present its first show on the theme Contemporary American Sex and Sexuality, The Sorrow and the Pity. I hope you enjoyed the game show at the beginning, Humiliation. Here's another oldie. Speaking is Helen Gurley Brown, once a household name. She's author of the groundbreaking book Sex and the Single Girl and longtime editor of the late lamented Cosmopolitan magazine. For you younger folks, this was a glossy monthly aimed at young adult women. It was known for the prodigious cleavage displayed on each cover and for articles with titles like 10 Do's and Don'ts for Your First Affair. Here's Helen.
Hello. I'm Helen Gurley Brown, and I wrote a book called Sex and the Single Girl. I had so many things left over to say, not necessarily to single girls, but to married girls and men, that I'm putting some of them on this record. There's so much to cover, really, that I think we'll just move right along. Let's start with some advice to men on how to have an affair. Now, I'm not for promiscuity, but I think it's ridiculous to pretend that it doesn't exist, and I think there's far less hurt and more joy for everybody if certain rules are followed. The way not to have an affair start, in my opinion, if you're a married man, is to run to the girl and say, "Honey, My wife's taken the kids to the country. The coast is clear for you and me. The fact that this is a convenient time for you has absolutely nothing to do with the situation. It certainly isn't any aphrodisiac. It might even be more flattering to the girl if your wife were in town. Another thought. On the first date, don't suggest that obscure little lobster house 50 miles up the coast, which you think is delightfully quaint. She knows what you're doing. You're hiding her out. In the beginning, at least, be sure you go first class. All right, let's say the affair is on. How do you keep her happy? Never assume the physical relationship is the all-out rewarding thing for her that it is for you. It just isn't. Even if she does enjoy your beautiful bronzed body, and you know she does, this is America. She's a nice girl. She's the product of what her mother and her grandmother told her. And they probably told her never to do what she's doing with you. Also, her body needs to have a baby. A lot of men offer her sex, not your superior brand, of course, but what she'd really like to hear from somebody is an offer of marriage. Presents take the pressure off, so do give them. Money is a perfectly wonderful present. No, it isn't half as insulting as you'd like to think. A nice share of General Motors or a U.S. E-bond tucked in with a bottle of Arpège really are very hard to take offense at. Don't expect your girl to share your wish not to be seen or to keep the lipstick off your collar. That's your responsibility. Maybe it sounds perverse, but a girl may actually take a certain offbeat pride in being seen with somebody else's attractive husband. If you do run into friends of the family, don't try to burrow your way to China. Just smile and be gracious and introduce everybody all around if you're trapped. No explanations and no apologies. Never drink up her booze without replacing it. You really ought to bring a lot more than you consume. Never let her spend her birthday alone, even if you have to lie your way into purgatory to get out of the house. Never lie to her about little things. The big lie you're living, that someday the two of you are going to be married, is going to be hard enough to explain when the time comes. Be sure she can trust you in smaller matters. Treat your girl with great dignity, like a princess. Never cheat on her with anyone but your wife.
I love to see you in the Lord.
What good is a show on contemporary American sexuality without a song celebrating lust, great sex, and the sense of personal purification and transcendence that can result from the above? And if there's a song that celebrates the transcendent potential of good sex more beautifully than this one, I'd sure like to hear it. That was singer-songwriter Chris Williamson singing Dream Child, about a quarter century ago. I was about to say it's my favorite love song, but of course it's not mostly about love. It's mostly about the burning white flame that doesn't destroy but purifies. The white flame that incubates the phoenix. And when Chris sings, "Come on, sweet fire, and lick me clean," the effect is stunning. Okay, I stun easily, but still. Now, what good is transforming lust without some bathos squalor and all-American winking, leering smuttiness to contrast it with? So, of course, we'll have to say a few words about Governor Spitzer. Here's a short piece, which I have condensed further, by David Michael Green, titled, "Why Spitzer Should Have Resigned and Why He Shouldn't Have." This was published in mid-March on Counterpunch. Here we go. "I think hypocrisy is one of the greater political crimes. I find hypocrisy in politics to be particularly offensive because it inherently implies a double standard. It means that there is one morality for elites and a whole other one for the rest of us chumps. That sort of society is not only ugly, more importantly, it is fundamentally corrosive of democracy. No political or justice system can long expect to last with a widespread perception of dual standards based on social status. Spitzer doesn't seem to have believed that his own rules for everyone else also applied to him. That's hypocrisy, and I have a problem with that," writes David Michael Green. Green continues, "Mr. Spitzer actually broke up at least one sophisticated and elite prostitution ring, precisely like the one he appears to have patronized himself. And, of course, in the process of doing so, he publicly derided the defendants for their lack of moral rectitude. Because of his hypocrisy, it was right that Elliot Spitzer should have had to resign as governor of New York. Just the same, part of me wishes he didn't. And that's because this is fundamentally yet another American sex scandal, based yet again on our absurd and doomed to fail puritanical sexual morality. My heart certainly goes out to Spitzer's wife and three daughters for the public humiliation they are suffering. In that respect, I actually feel bad for Spitzer himself as well. He messed up, but, like Clinton's impeachment, this is hardly the appropriate punishment. This is, first of all, a personal matter. Is it really necessary that the entire state of New York, the entire country, and much of the rest of the world be involved in this man's sex life? Does it really affect the public trust or his capacity to govern effectively? More importantly, though, America keeps experiencing sex scandals in large part because we continue to embrace an unrealistic and even unhealthy code of sexual morality. Fundamentally, we like to pretend that humans aren't actually sexual beings, except when they're in bed with their heterosexual spouse. For starters, anyone who's been through puberty knows the absurdity of this pretense. Imagine waiting from age 12 or so until your marriage at age 30 or so for any kind of sexual satisfaction whatsoever, including even the personal kind. You ought to get an Olympic medal, a Nobel Prize, and a winning lottery ticket, combined, for pulling that one off. Perhaps avarice is a good analogy. Some humans desire material goods in extreme quantities, just as some people, and very often the same folks, have a rapacious appetite for sex. Funny, isn't it, that this society praises the former, even when their behaviors can cause harm to thousands of other people, but ridicules, humiliates, and criminalizes the latter. That's the sex addicts, as some would call them. Back to the text. Personally, I think that closing down factories in order to buy yourself that third yacht is rather a larger crime than hooking up with a prostitute for an hour or two of hanky-panky. But what do I know? Obviously not much, since the first guy gets some art museum wing named for him, and the other guy gets a healthy dose of public humiliation and the opportunity to stand before a nice man with a gavel and black robes. I think perhaps it's finally about time that modern society ceases to have its sexual morality disastrously dictated by the particular obsessions and compulsions of some twisted bishop who is traipsing around North Africa during the 4th and 5th centuries. Ken speaking here. Of course, that would be St. Augustine. Back to the essay. I think we've grown up enough now to make our own rules for our own sexual conduct without the guidance of some misogynistic monk whose greatest claim to fame was helping to launch the Dark Ages. Once we were told that masturbation was a sin, and yet we as a society seem to have grown up enough to transcend that one. I guess we're each on our own to deal with the hairy palms issue. Hint, try Windex. But at least American society seems to have largely outgrown the absurdity of viewing jerking off as a sin. What an accomplishment, eh? No wonder we're the greatest power in the world. We also seem to have largely managed to transcend prohibitions on married couples using birth control, people engaging in premarital sex, and now even homosexual relations. American attitudes towards sexuality are certainly more mature today than they were a generation or two ago. Most people get that these are private matters subject to private morality. And, almost without exception, the ones that don't, from swaggered to haggard, are the very same people who are personally engaged in the most twisted stuff as they alternate between repressing and expressing their sexual urges. If consenting adults want to do it, and no one is harmed, there is little reason to imagine why it should be outlawed or even morally suspect. Raised eyebrows or the occasional whispered snicker would still be permitted, however, at least where the kinkiest stuff is concerned. Look, some people like to have sex in beds, others in airplane restrooms. Unless you desperately need to go potty at 30,000 feet and all the toilets are occupied, who cares? Similarly, partners need to negotiate what works best for them in their sexual relations, and this is just not a matter of public interest. Some couples might be happiest in non-exclusive relationships. That should be their prerogative, without legal or moral penalty. It's really not our business. With luck, someday we'll be able to look back at our warped morality and its consequences with a cringe and a groan. Europeans largely do. When former French President François Mitterrand died in 1996, his wife invited the old codger's mistress and his daughter by her to the funeral. Perhaps the point is now moot where Eliot Spitzer is concerned. He threw in the towel as New York governor, consigning himself to a lifetime of being used as a Jay Leno punchline. And anyhow, his case is complicated by his hypocrisy, his arrogance, and his altogether too gleeful profiting from the mistakes of others. But just the same, isn't it time that this country grows up a little and stops obsessing about other people's rather basic human behaviors? Wouldn't we all have been better off in a world where Spitzer had apologized profusely, but privately, to his wife, and then gone back to work, improving the lives of the people of New York? Thanks for listening. I wish I knew who to thank for the Helen Gurley Brown recording. We heard a selection from her record album, Lessons in Love, which was released in 1963, 1 year after the publication of her very well-known book, Sex and the Single Girl. Your comments and suggestions are most welcome. Email me at kdowst, that's K-D-O-W-S-T, at hotmail.com. Until next time, from the spacious underground studios of WWUH, here's wishing you a good week. Illa get to my non-carborundum. Try to speak the truth and keep the faith.
Nellie is a nice girl, but Hannah is a horrible prude. Paul is a policeman, but Peter is a pimply and rude young man.
Sally is a nice girl and a good one. Hannah is a horrible prude.
Show it to him once and he will sing.
Paul is a policeman,
but Peter is a pimply and he will do his dumb and his
Sally is a nice girl, but Hannah is a horrible prude. Paul is a policeman, but Peter is a pimply. He will do his duty and his duty is to
Sally is a singer and a good one. Hannah is a horrible prude.
Bum 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 bum